This is the Multi-Faith Matters Podcast. I'm your host, John Morgan.
Well, this is the podcast for Multi-Faith Matters, and I'm privileged today to have as my guest Dr. Craig Blomberg, and he is a part of the faculty of Denver Seminary. He joined there in 1986, and he is currently a distinguished professor of New Testament. I've got his bio in front of me, and the number of books and articles and academic accomplishments. We don't have enough time in the podcast to list them all, but I'm looking forward to our conversation. The reason why we have Craig here today, first of all, welcome to the podcast, Craig.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
The reason we thought Craig would be good to have here is Craig has been involved in evangelical Mormon dialogues for many years, I think at least 20 years.
Yes.
And in addition to that, he's contributed a chapter based upon that experience to a forthcoming book that I've had the privilege of co-editing coming out through Pickwick on the need for watching our emotions, our orthopathy as evangelicals in multi-faith engagement. So those two areas come together as we have our discussion with Craig today. Craig, many evangelicals, particularly those in apologetic ministries, assume that this denunciation kind of approach, we contrast their doctrine with ours and offer a really strong apologetic refutation, is the best and most biblical way to approach other religions, particularly groups like Mormons and now post 9/11 with Muslims. Appeals are made to Jesus denouncing the Pharisees and Paul the Judaizers in terms of a scriptural justification. As you've studied the biblical text over the years as a scholar, would you agree with this approach? And if not, why not?
No, I wouldn't. It's interesting. A number of years ago, I did a study, and it led to an article in the Journal of the Evangelical Theological Society on who Jesus and the apostles get really mad at and in what context. And the answer is consistently the religious insider to the movement that they saw themselves to be a part of, who was well-trained and should have known better. It's easy for us to forget that in the context of Jesus' ministry, he was a Jew. There isn't anything else he could have labeled himself as. And of all the Jewish leadership groups, the Pharisees in many ways were closest to him in their goals and their objectives of applying scripture to every walk of life. And so the Judaizers for Galatia were apparently Christians who had believed in Jesus as Messiah, but had to become overly legalist. So the right people to apply that hardline approach today are the ultra right-wing fundamentalists who are too grumpy within our own midst.
It's always a good reminder biblically not to be too grumpy. Where does the biblical ethic and practice of love of neighbor and even enemy, which we don't seem to look at too often, come into practice in regards to those in other religions?
Seems like that's the obvious application. Of course, if I'm in a war I'm fighting a battle, then I think of the enemy as the soldiers from the enemy nation. But most of us don't live most of our lives in warfare. And so religious tensions may be the best example of all of where we often have enemies today, whether we consciously think of them that way or not.
Now, you've been doing this dialogue for many years. You've developed relationships with those in the Mormon community, or those that used to call themselves Mormon. One of the criticisms I think we hear sometimes from apologetics ministries is that, well, if you're not doing evangelism, what's the point of continuing the relationship? Building on that previous question, if we are to practice an ethic of love of neighbor and enemy, it's not just one-off kinds of in passing as we proclaim. Would you make a case that there's value for Christian disciples to be in loving relationship with those in other religious traditions?
Well, of course. I mean, it's always struck me as odd that I've never met anyone, however conservative, ultra-Orthodox, or grumpy, who wouldn't say, I need to get to know my neighbor. I need to have a full-orbed relationship with my coworker, my students and teachers at the public schools, or whatever line of work we're in. You build relationships, you witness out of a basis of relationship. And yet somehow when it comes to not the atheist, not the hardcore aggressive Richard Dawkins supporter, who are the toughest people to talk to today, but when you come to somebody who actually shares a lot of your same beliefs but is different on important ones, whether it's Jew or Muslim or a Buddhist or Mormon or Jehovah's Witnesses, all of a sudden that gets thrown out the window as if relationship building isn't important. And I've never figured that out.
You and me both, I think. How have your relationships and conversations with Mormon leaders over the years put this ethic into practice for you, and how has it influenced those involved?
Yeah, it's been very interesting. Something I would not have suspected going into all of this, and something that was not true the first several years, as those of us participating sort of felt each other out and didn't always trust one another to the extent that many of us have come to trust that we have goodwill and are telling the truth about ourselves. What I didn't expect was this. If the ground rules for conversation are that on this occasion, I am not overtly going to try to convert you to my convictions, then all of a sudden, both of us, each of us, has the freedom to share anything we want about our most deeply seated beliefs. We can ask each other questions. What do you mean by this? Does this imply such and such? And at the end of the day, we understand that the other side would dearly love us to join them. And we understand in detail everything they believe, correcting lots of misperceptions, which never happens if I'm on a neighbor's doorstep advertising my church's Easter service, or if two Mormon missionaries are on my doorstep simply wanting to see if I'll have the conversations with them that might lead to my baptism. And so it's, even if my only goal were evangelism, which it's not, it would still be a healthier and more productive environment. Mm-hmm.
Any stories come to mind, or what's one story of transformation that might that you just had an aha moment during your dialogues?
Oh gosh,
put you on the spot here.
So many.
Yeah, just want to highlight. I think evangelicals need to hear the possibilities that are there if we simply love our neighbors and have these relationships.
I would say that over the years, the people on both sides of the dialogue have self-selected on many occasions to opt out when, for a variety of reasons, this wasn't a passion of theirs. And in almost every case, we have replaced those individuals with people, again, on both sides, much more committed to the dialogue, the process, and among the Latter-day Saints who are within a growing minority of those who think much more like we do, even if not on every issue and not even on every important issue. And so I think the aha moments for me have been to say, whatever else I still strongly disagree with, as far as I can tell, this man, this woman worships the Jesus I know and love. It's not another Jesus. What I do with that in terms of other doctrines, we can debate, but I cannot impugn these people as worshiping a Jesus other than the Jesus of the New Testament. Mm-hmm.
One final question for you, Craig. What words of encouragement would you give to pastors and church members in their study of scriptures, especially the New Testament, as they read it with an eye towards those in other religions?
Don't just read the New Testament. I mean, certainly read it, know it well. In an age of biblical illiteracy, when we're much more likely to read what somebody says about the Bible or listen to a podcast of somebody preaching. Read the Bible, know what it says in context, but then also get to know real live people of groups that are significant in number in your area, whatever other faith that may represent, and find out from them what they believe. There may not always be as much diversity as if, say, somebody calls themselves a Baptist. Who knows what that means, other than maybe something about baptism. But every group has diversity within it. There is no textbook anywhere I can turn to, and especially a textbook written by somebody outside of another movement, and read everything and go meet Joe Blow and say, well, I know what you believe because I read this textbook. And sometimes what they believe may even be at odds with their own religion, and they don't care for whatever reason. Maybe it doesn't matter in their local group. Maybe it does, but this is an age of potluck religion. We pick and choose. I've met a fair number of quote-unquote evangelical Christians who flat out don't believe some things their leaders think they believe. Mm-hmm. So just get to know people, love people, find out what they believe, interact with what they believe, not what somebody else says they believe.
Good advice for sure. Craig, I want to thank you so much in the midst of a busy academic schedule for making time for this conversation. I appreciate it.
Well, you're very welcome.